You are listening to Friends of the Earth Europe show at We Are World Radio.
Radio Europe, a show bringing together what's going on in the over 30 national member groups of Friends of the Earth Europe.
We're the European branch of the world's largest grassroots environmental and social justice network, Friends of the Earth International.
I'm Fran.
I'm Shanna.
Hi. This is a podcast about civic space and, more precisely, shrinking civic space. Shrinking civic space is a phenomenon that we've sadly become increasingly aware of in the Friends of the Earth Europe network in the last years. And we want to understand it better and how it's affecting our members and their work and our allies.
A healthy civic space is a central feature of democratic societies, because people and citizens could actually participate actively in the political sphere. And also there's the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, saying that everyone has the right to speak out, to organize and to take action. So for us, this civil society space is connected to the freedom of expression, freedom of assembly, and the right to protest, as well as the ability for non-government organizations to operate and act as watchdogs for governments and corporations.
We are going to speak to two of our member groups for this podcast and hear really what's happening on the ground in Austria and in Cyprus in particular. So we want to understand how civic space is affecting our member groups on the ground, and also importantly how they are responding to it. But before we do that, we want to have a more global picture. And we've been doing some research and some mapping to try and understand what this phenomenon is and how it's affecting civil society.
Mm-hmm. Well, within the Friends of the Earth Europe region, we have conducted an internal survey to identify how many of our member groups have experienced different types of pressure and forms of shrinking space. So to indeed understand how we are impacted, and also what have been the response strategies and tactics. This survey has resulted in finding that 16 of our member groups have reported a form, at least, of shrinking space. And the most common ones have been linked to stigmatization and negative labeling, pressure for participation, administrative restrictions, and in some cases also physical harassment and intimidation, as well as criminalization through prosecution and investigation.
So basically we found that all the most common recognized forms of shrinking civil society space are being experienced in the Friends of the Earth Europe network at the moment.
Yeah. And also the allies that our member groups are working with.
Mm-hmm. So this ranges from, as you said, negative labeling, just bad mouthing of NGOs or specific people or specific organizations and their work, and then legislative changes which put real barriers on how NGOs can operate, and the right to protest or the right to take part in demonstrations, for example. And then it ranges up to prosecution and criminalization and physical attacks. But am I right that the survey also told us that there's a lot of activity happening to resist this and to expose it, is that right?
Yeah, definitely. Some of the most common strategies that were used by our member groups were linked to building coalitions, forming alliances with other organizations, also with media, with other stakeholders that usually we are less involved with. Other forms of responses have been linked to really massive communications and media work. Also, capacity building, whether it's being more equipped legally how to respond to systematic attacks.
Was there any information in the survey about what's really behind this? Where's it coming from? Why is it increased so much?
Well, for environmental justice organizations who were campaigning, for example, against mining in one case, yeah, there seemingly is a corporate capture of decision-making processes, whether it's through the issuance of environmental impact assessments or quote-unquote public consultations. It has been more and more difficult. And so perhaps it's also linking to our approach as Friends of the Earth, that we are trying to fight for justice, for people's and nature's rights. And of course, when we do that, there's the powers that we are trying to counter, who are having vested interests, economic interests, to have their projects pushed through. And so there's this tension that happens. And unfortunately, those supposedly democratic spaces have been captured by corporate power. Mm-hmm. And yeah, some of the governing parties are working closely with those private companies.
And we've seen a rise of a certain type of government, which is particularly friendly to corporations and more far right authoritarian style governments in Europe.
Yeah. And also, unfortunately, some of our organizations, because we are also a social justice network, those who have shown solidarity with marginalized sectors, whether it's refugees, migrants, have also been facing threats or criminalization for supporting people. So unfortunately, that's some of the things that came out of this mapping in the network, and that only shows how we have to strengthen ourselves in relation to promoting the rights of people.
I think the best thing we can do is hear from people on the ground in their own words how shrinking civil society space, well, what it looks like in different countries.
Yeah.
And that's why we've been speaking to Friends of the Earth Austria and Friends of the Earth Cyprus.
Hi, my name is Reinhard Uhrig of Friends of the Earth Austria, Global 2000.
Thanks, Reinhard. We're talking to you about civic space and the phenomenon of shrinking civic space. Can you say what experience you've got of that in Austria, please?
Unfortunately, very nasty experience with shrinking space. University professor Ruth Simse, she actually studies shrinking space in all over Europe. And she introduced me to the concept of civil society capture. Three steps. First of all, a semantic weakening of civil society. Then, shrinking of participation. And last of all, changes to the policy level. And that's exactly what we have seen over the last 4 years in Austria.
Could you talk us through that a bit then? Over
sure.
The 4 years, what exactly has happened and how has it affected Global?
Yeah, sure. 2017 brought the Sebastian Kurz Conservative Party into government. The party ruled together with the right-wing Freedom Party, and they started straight from the start with attacking civil society. First and foremost, obviously, the NGOs working in the field of migration, but also environmental NGOs. Straight from the beginning, for example, the environment minister started stressing that NGOs were selecting their campaign targets primarily in view of financial motives from their, quote, business model. So when I, for example, when I confronted her in a public meeting on banning bee-harming neonicotinoids, she said, word by word, "I can understand that bees are attracted from your business model." So derogatory terms for civil society claiming we only do it for money rather than for legitimate environmental interests.
Wow, it's so blatant.
Yes, and we keep on seeing this. That was a minister. It's already part of the bureaucracy of the ministry who is addressing us like that. It just happened 2 weeks ago to my colleague working on plastics when we were talking about reducing plastic consumption in Austria. He referred to the business model of the NGOs. So this is part of their narrative that we are out there for the money. And this is obviously weakening civil society by semantics. That's the first step.
But that's the first phase.
Yeah. Okay. Second phase is changes to participation. This, I think that the most notorious case was last year. The government changed legislation on the environmental impact assessment, but in a last minute change to this legislation, the coalition parties brought in a section into the legislation that every single organization wanting to participate in environmental impact assessments had to prove that at least 100 persons were members of these organizations, so excluding smaller organizations, and what was worse, forcing them to make names and addresses of these persons known to the Ministry of Environment and also to the Ministry of Economics. This obviously was a clear breach of data protection laws, so we fought that very heavy with legal expertise, with lawyers and everything. We had a two-week, very fierce and very public debate. We managed to bring it to media, mass media and everything. Mm-hmm. And then after that, they backed down to a certain extent, mm-hmm. saying we have to prove 100 members to a notary, which is, in our view, still illegal. There's European Court of Justice legislation, well, ruling on a similar case in Sweden that was deemed illegal under EIA directive. So we're still fighting this. But the push is quite clear. They want to, first of all, delegitimize us, and then they want to exclude us from participation. That's the second step.
And that's restrictions that you're operating under right now.
Yes. We have to prove that we have 100 members to the ministry. Mm-hmm. This obviously creates work, creates cost, and excludes smaller NGOs that don't have 100 members. And we are just supporting a Dach organization, Ökobüro. They are just fighting a legal cause for a smaller organization. We think it's illegal.
Okay.
So that's the second step. And the third step, to a certain extent, is, well, similar to this, changes to policy level. You know, the Conservative Party is very neoliberal. Sebastian Kurz is a very neoliberal chancellor. And he was strongly pushing the neoliberal agenda, in particular of the Austrian Chamber of Commerce, Wirtschaftskammer, again trying to get in our field when it came to environment. Well, they did lots of things when it came to labor laws, but when it came to environment, the, I think in my view, most notorious legislative change was the introduction of a so-called Standortentwicklungsgesetz, framing it as positive for the Austrian business location as such, that environmental impact assessments should be speeded up. So always framing it very positive. What this means, what this meant in the first place was to stop environmental impact assessments after 12 months and to automatically approve the project. That was the legal proposal, which is obviously totally illegal when it comes to environmental impact assessment directive by EU Aarhus anything. And they again then changed it to creating an automatic option that after 12 months of the project being under environmental impact scrutiny, it moves to the next legal level, which is totally stupid. It's the next legal level doesn't even wasn't involved before. In most cases, the project owners don't have the capacity to bring in all the documentation until 6, 7, 8 months. So in most cases, it's delayed due to lacking documentation, mm-hmm. or to overload of bureaucracy, and not to due to position by environmental organizations.
I can imagine that environmental impact assessments often take years for very good reason. Is there an example you can give us, something to do with Global's campaigns, where you've seen directly the difference that the changes to the environmental impact assessments have made?
Not yet, as it's so heavily contested.
Okay.
So, again, with this Standortentwicklungsgesetz, the European Commission has just started infringement procedures against Austria. So we're quite positive that this legislation will have to be taken back. But as I said before, it's an atmosphere of attack, basically. Semantic attack and also legal changes that make our work more difficult. Already the previous government changed the legal situation. We have to register demonstrations. If we want to register them, if we don't want to do spontaneous illegal actions, we don't want to do legal actions, we used to have to register them 24 hours in advance. We now have to register them 48 hours in advance. Okay. There's also some exclusion zones around certain sensitive business and this kind of shit, which clearly creates a sense of shrinking space for civil society.
This has been going on for more or less 4 years, you say?
Yes. It has to be stressed. It started already under the Labour Conservative government, but it increased pace on a massive scale under the Conservative far-right coalition.
Right. Yes, it is really alarming to hear these symptoms of shrinking space,
yes.
in Austria. Mm-hmm. And you've mentioned a while ago that you have organized some debates and also building your legal capacity. You've also mentioned supporting smaller NGOs with less than 100 members. I wonder what other strategies or tactics do you have in relation to responding to this shrinking space in Austria?
Well, first of all, it has to be said that the environmental organizations were very well organized and very, very well coordinated when these attacks came. So we've been working closely with WWF, Greenpeace, but also with the big nature conservation organizations in Austria like Alpenverein. Alpenverein is the nature friends, but in particular Alpenverein is a very big organization, 750,000 members in Austria, a country of 8 million inhabitants. And they're very conservative. They're very Christian, very conservative, want to protect nature. And they realized that they were being threatened as well. So in particular, when it came to environmental impact assessments. So we managed to get all these organizations to coordinate and to speak up. And that was very important.
Are there any other strategies that you're using as Global 2000 or with allies to try and resist or push back on civil society capture?
Well, I would say first and foremost, media work. Very fast, very well coordinated media work. As I said before, the changes to the environmental impact assessment when they wanted us to publish the names and addresses of our members, we hit them hard via radio interviews, via mass media publications for 2 weeks in a row, more or less. And that was not just Global 2000, that was everyone.
This is presumably a lot about claiming the narrative and talking about the importance of civic space and NGOs in a healthy democracy.
Precisely. And we also have been part of an initiative by Attack Austria, the Solidarity Pact that we already started before the last government, saying that we stand in solidarity with all sorts of NGOs. And out of this came a more active approach, because this obviously was reactive in order to defend each other when we came under attack. But from this, we developed a report, basically a narrative saying what the values of a living democracy are. And we presented that to quite good impact before the summer. So I think that needs to be repeated again and again, what a living democracy is and what is at stake, basically. But I think in times like these, and we're seeing tendencies in, well, not just Eastern countries, that I think is a learning from this. These populist politicians exist in, look to United Kingdom, look to, I don't know, Bavaria, where I originally come from. So we have to resist. We have to show what the values are of a living democracy, and we have to stand up.
Absolutely, yeah. Thanks, Reinhard.
Pleasure.
My name is Natasha Ioannou, and I work for Friends of the Earth, Cyprus.
Hi, Natasha. We're trying to understand what shrinking space looks like in different parts of Europe and how it's affecting Friends of the Earth. And we understand that it's something that you're grappling with in Cyprus. So could you tell us, what shrinking space are you aware of? What forms?
We have had a lot of struggles. It's a small community, it's a small place. So civil society has been struggling a lot to make a presence. We have been regarded as a nuisance by the government, because we usually act as a watchdog. We do get invited in public consultations, so we are present in these democratic protests regarding all the policies, environmental policies or social policies. But the consultations are taking place during the morning working hours. So that is not okay for us, because most of the CSOs are run by volunteers. This is the first part, and the second part is like sometimes the outcome of the public consultation is not taken into account by the decision makers. So this is a double-edged sword. Like, we are present in this democratic process, but then what we say and what we demand is not taken into account. We also have experienced a narrowing space for CSOs to operate due to the increase of neoliberal and far-right policies and politicians, of course, that have been attacking environmental and other social CSOs under the pretext that our group is halting all economic development and any other advancement that is going to happen in the country. And we have been the target of a lot of political harassment. One example of that political harassment that is joined through with some media support is the petition that BirdLife Cyprus issued about a new highway that was going to pass through an ecologically sensitive and protected area. So BirdLife collected signatures to oppose this new highway, and they have been attacked by verbally and publicly through social media and other media outlets by the local authorities, by government, politicians, by people in the media, journalists as well, and by other groups that are local and operate in that area, because these people want the highway and they think that it's going to make their lives better, but that would not be the case anyway. One really bad example of that harassment was like 3 or 4 days ago. There was a media article in one of the biggest news agencies in the country that was pretty offensive for the people that are working on bird life. It was sexist because it was women that were presented this petition to the government. And it was really degrading on the environmental struggles that we have. Also in media, in Cyprus generally, I mean, if we exclude social media, they provide a little space for CSOs to come out, or like in panels, or in shows or in debates, especially the traditional media like TV, radio, or big newspapers or different news outlets. And we get coverage and we get demands for us to be there in these panels when there is a conflict between CSOs and the government. This is okay in a sense, but it's promoting a very negative image of civil society organizations and environmentalists as well. Because we are presented as people who are always pessimists, looking at the negative side, that we're nagging, and that we don't want anything basically happening in the country. In society as well, sometimes, I mean, people do not quite understand our role and why we, how we operate in society in general. There was a basic lack of active citizenship a few years back in Cyprus, but we have seen that this has been increasing, it has been changing, and we are really, really happy about that. We are witnessing a lot of grassroots initiatives popping up all over the island, and and these initiatives are promoting environmental and social justice. Since the financial crisis in the decade, CSOs have in Cyprus have no core funding from the government. This has not changed, even though some people say the economy is getting better. And of course, this reduces the capacities that the NGOs and civil society organizations have in order to operate, increase their strength. And therefore, being small, it doesn't allow you to demand and expand in an already shrinking civil society space.
Thanks, Natessa. I mean, it sounds like a really live current situation. You talked about an article just this week, and it sounds like it's taking different forms as well. Do you observe that it's got worse? Is this a recent phenomenon? How has the situation changed from how you see it?
It's a circle, basically. I mean, it depends on which time period we are talking about. In certain times, it is worse, but recently the challenge is that it has been hidden and it has been covered by all these neoliberal policies that we get as CSOs. I mean, it hasn't gone away.
And what does that mean for your day-to-day work?
Well, it's something that you need to work against it. So it's part of your day-to-day activities, like responding to people or responding to this article. It needs a lot of planning, a lot of communication in order to have a basic plan in advance how to handle this attack. And also you need more effort and you need more struggle, let's say, and more strength in order to get over these small little things that happen, that come in your day-to-day work.
Yeah. We are also very interested to hear what you have been doing to respond to the shrinking civil society space. Mm-hmm. We are aware that one of your response activities is like focus on capacity building to strengthen the role of civil society. And perhaps you could tell us also more about this.
Mm-hmm. Of course. In terms of advocacy and dealing with policy and decision makers, we are forming coalitions, and coalitions are really important for us, alliances, because we are strong in numbers, mm-hmm. and we have to be honest. I mean, no one can do this alone. We have established coalitions between environmental groups and other organizations, and coalitions between environmental and social groups or other organizations and initiatives. We are trying to build and expand our network, and we support several initiatives in grassroots, and with all these we're becoming stronger in groups and in numbers in order to be able, when we visit the decision makers, when we make a claim, we do it as a group, as many people, as different kinds of organizations, which makes this easier to access them and request meetings. It does not necessarily mean that our points are being heard or they are taken into consideration, but it does make a difference. So as Shana mentioned, we are focusing on capacity building as well. We had the 3-day training seminar in Cyprus on advocacy, where participants had the opportunity to polish their advocacy skills, work on their plans, and become more effective and have more results when we do advocacy, because this is really important. So we work on building alliances, on how we focus our energies, how to focus our capacity, because if we are small, then we need to hit where it will make the bigger effect. On the levels of the different attacks that we get, especially through the media, we do issue statements. This is how we usually deal with these issues, against the attacks, of course. And we're trying to, we are standing our ground, and we are standing in solidarity with other groups that have been attacked or have been going through this, because it's really heartbreaking sometimes when other organizations go through all this stuff. In media now, how we are dealing with the shrinking space that we find in media, we are trying our best to utilize the small space that is been given to the civil society organizations. We basically jump on any opportunity where we can present environmental and other social issues on the media outlets, and we are always open to talk to TV or radio shows on any issues. We are present when there is conflict between the government or the local authorities and environmental organizations. But it's very difficult not to feed into the notion that the CSOs are always negative, are always against government policies or measures. So we are trying to be as objective as possible, but it's very difficult because we are mostly are against governmental policies, especially when they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And so to back up that and to increase our capacity building, especially in media, we organized two trainings in Cyprus. One was the media training for CSOs, and the other one was a journalist training on environmental and social issues. So the media training was a capacity building workshop, 1-day workshop that focused, that was targeted on representatives and people that work on NGOs and CSOs. And it was focused on how to access different media outlets, how to write a press release, how to handle bad press or bad publicity, and how to be basically more present in traditional media that have a further outreach in society, except social media, of course. And the journalist training was focused on informing journalists on the work that we do. So we wanted to decompose the negative image that usually the media have on environmental activists or any other TSOs, and promote the positive narrative on civil society, of course.
It's really inspiring what you're doing, Natessa. I really see some of your initiatives being very inspirational and useful in other countries. Yeah. And I think I have a particular interest in how you're trying to reclaim space in the media and change the narrative on civil society. What perceptions did you feel like the journalists had before the training, and what perceptions do you think they had at the end?
Well, some of the journalists, they were really curious as to like see the faces, let's say. So they didn't, I don't know if they had another idea of how we usually look. So they were really open to listen to what we do, our campaigns, our demands. We were able to discuss our demands with them as well. They also gave us some ideas. So it was a really good discussion, and I think that most journalists that were there left with a more positive image.
Good to know. Just one last question. You spoke about the importance of coalition building and alliances and showing solidarity. And I think that's something that Friends of the Earth and broader civil society as a whole would say is key to pushing back against shrinking space. Do you have ideas about how the European network of Friends of the Earth can maximize our alliance or be more in solidarity with each other and help each other when somebody comes under attack?
I think one of the best examples that we already have experienced as a network was the school sustainability. I mean that the notion and the way that project was operating, it was really establishing bases and building relationships and partnerships and hence coalitions and solidarity between the member groups.
I'm really emotional. Oh. Shane is particularly happy to hear that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, of course. But I mean, it has been the truth. I mean, I personally have learned so much throughout that project. In new tools and new methodologies, popular education, how to facilitate training, how to encourage affected communities, how to work with different communities. So I think that was the basis. And then after you had that base and that first layer, you are able to push for space in a shrinking civil society area, because you have all these tools and all that background.
Yeah, it somehow really fostered also the community that we have in Friends of the Earth Europe. Yeah, there are all, of course, definitely some practical things, how to do community organizing and so on and so forth. And yeah, now I'm just really glad that those are really useful also in your practical day-to-day relations with allies and finding, like what you said, solidarity and strength in numbers.
Thank you so much, Natessa.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a really pleasure talking to you, girl.
Thanks for listening. To keep up to date with our network's campaigns,
follow Friends of the Earth Europe on Facebook and Twitter and visit our website at www.foeeurope.org.
Get involved with the Friends of the Earth group near you by going to foeeurope.org/network.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you download podcasts.
And follow radio stories from around the Friends of the Earth International Network at radiomundoreal.fm.
Thanks to Pete, the temp, for the music. And see you next time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
This was Friends of the Earth Europe and Rio Radio.